This is the Gambling Gauchos.
Hey, if we keep playing and fighting for each other, and no matter what happens, we just say what's next. That's all we do. Somebody turn on some damn music!
You're listening to the Gambling Gauchos. Talking Texas Tech, betting on the Big 12 and beyond. We've got everything you need, money lines, memes, and matadors.
Well, you want to quit, Ethan? That'll be the day.
Now, here's Kyle Jacobson and Rob Bro, the money line matadors, the casino cowboys, the parlay picadors.
You see, in this world, there's two kinds of people, my friend. Those with loaded guns and those who dig. You dig.
With the Gambling Gauchos. Oh, and one more thing. It's all West Texas. It always has been.
Welcome to the Gambling Gauchos. I'm Rob Rowe. He's Kyle Jacobson. The Cardinals Sports Center studio. You can gear up for baseball season, whether it's Texas Tech baseball with some official merchandise, or your kid's little league, or your adult league, whatever you do, go buy some stuff at Cardinals Sports Center. Either online or at cardinalsports.com, or
if you want to look really good on the Jumbotron at Dan Law Field, make sure you get your Gauchos hat also from Cardinals.
Can I finish the ad read?
I thought you were lobbing an alley for me.
I did. I was just messing with you.
That's a funny bit.
I could tell you liked it. Or, I don't even remember what I was saying. Or in person. That's what I was going to say. 68th-ish and slide. Yeah, that was awesome. I did not know that guy, but I saw him on the Jumbotron, snapped a quick picture. That was pretty awesome to see.
Our main man, Seth.
I sure went to talk to him.
That's cool to have somebody not just rocking our merch, but then to be displayed on the Jumbotron is pretty sweet.
And then I saw another Gauchos hat, a white Gauchos hat, out in the wild at the baseball game.
Out in the wild.
It was our friend, Big Hen.
Big Hen.
The goat, some would say.
I literally faced him, like, quick getting to know the Gauchos. I'm gonna take us way off track before we even get started today. But I was in Austin for work last week, and I met up with Mateo No Mayo for dinner. And I was on the phone with my mom, and she's like, "Well, what did you do for dinner?" I was like, "Oh, I went to Matt's," and Matt's is the name of the restaurant with somebody named Mateo. She's like, "Oh, who did you go with?" I was like, "Oh, like some guy I met on the internet." And she's like, "What?" She's like, "Have you ever met this guy before?" And I was like, "Yeah, like he's one of my like Twitter podcast friends." And then fast forward to this weekend, I'm trying to fix my shower, and I'm like 90% of the way done, too far along to stop, but I was a little bit stuck. So I FaceTime another one of my Twitter podcast friends, Big Hen, and we got the job done. So it's cool to have listeners rocking your merch who will go to dinner with you when you're in town for the night and who will help you fix a plumbing problem.
Did you pick Matt's or did Maddie pick Matt's? Or was that just like a coincidence?
No, I picked Matt's. Matt's is my favorite restaurant in Austin. No free ads. And I was a little bit disappointed in Mateo. He's like fine with Matt's, and I think Matt's is goated. He was like, "Oh yeah, it's solid. I come here every now and then." I was like, "Dude, if I lived in Austin, I would be here like once a week."
What kind of food is it? Sorry, I was trying to tweet the link while we're doing this.
It's Tex-Mex. It's Matt's El Rancho.
Gotcha. You're a big Tex-Mex guy, aren't you?
Big Tex-Mex guy.
Would you say that's your go-to cuisine?
Getting probably to know the Gauchos? So. Yeah, I mean, like, it's kind of like that question, if you could only eat one kind of food for the rest of your life, I feel like Tex-Mex would probably be it.
I might go there with you. Not to match, just that cuisine, as if you could only have one. Start, bench, cut, Tex-Mex, Italian, Asian.
Ooh.
Which I guess I know you're starting, yeah.
I'm starting Tex-Mex, and then the other two, it depends on, like, the mood that I'm in.
It's not how the game works.
Well.
So we picked West Virginia as our tournament team. I'm going to inbox your comment, Luke. I'm not going to put that up. Just going to, no context, inbox that. West Virginia loses against Maryland, which we thought might happen. A bunch of people asking us, do you regret your decision? Kyle, what would you say if somebody asked you right now, do you regret your decision to pick West Virginia?
No, absolutely not. No regrets. I mean, it's the risk you take when you go with an 8-9 matchup. You know, anything can happen. If we were trying to pick the team that was going to go the furthest, we had a variety of 1, 2, and 3 seeds at our disposal. But that wasn't the point of the initiative. I will say, some questionable officiating. I don't blame it all on that, because there were also moments where West Virginia just needed to, like, hold on to the ball, and they couldn't do it. I would have liked to – the other reason why they were so enticing was, one, they drew a semi-rivalry game in the first round, so that was pretty cool. But they had a shot at a 1 seed in the second round, and we could have been, like, big-time underdog story. Didn't work out. But I would say the growth in Twitter friends from the West Virginia fan base – I tweeted something along these lines, but maybe the nets we cut down in March are the friends we make along the way. And so I regret nothing. I enjoyed being a Mountaineer for, like, what, 48 hours?
If that, yeah. And really just one game. We did shift allegiances. We skipped Iowa State. Was that an accident, or could you really not put a new profile picture up?
No, I really couldn't, because apparently Twitter blew sort of a wonky explanation. Probably nobody cares, but Twitter blew because you can get a check mark now. They won't let you change your profile picture constantly to avoid impersonators. And so we changed it for West Virginia, and then we were like, I think we were going to change it for Iowa State. You and I maybe discussed that, but it wouldn't let us. So we weren't really like picking Iowa State. We didn't have the Iowa State Gauchos logo up, and then they had the worst shooting performance possible.
Couldn't have been
and
worse.
So people were talking about the Gauchos curse. I responded to one Iowa State fan. I was like, did we curse you by not picking you, or did we curse West Virginia by picking them? And he was like, both. So I guess anytime somebody loses, whether we pick them or not, it's because of us.
It's our fault. We did throw some allegiance there to Kansas State, and they are now in the Sweet 16. Shout out to Jerome Tang.
Yeah. They I was worried about the matchup with Kentucky, because everybody who I follow from K-State was saying that any team that really excels at rebounding would be a tough matchup for K-State. Of course, they're going up against Oscar Tshiebwe. And so they were, like, not thrilled about that potential 3-6 matchup. They weren't favored, despite being the higher seed. I think they were 2.5 or 3-point dogs. But they played really well, especially Marquise Noel. Man, for them to be in the Sweet 16 after – finishing 9th or 10th, I think, each of the last 3 years in the Big 12, picked last, first-year head coach, pieces of roster together. I know there were some, like, Kansas fans upset that Bill Self wasn't Big 12 Coach of the Year. This is why I went to Jerome Tang.
Yeah.
Like, he exceeded by 2, 3, 4 times any reasonable expectation for this team this year. And they might not be done yet, so – absolute props to K-State. They've had a tremendous season, even if it ends here, but it might not. They could – who knows? Who knows how far they could go?
They have a well-built tournament team. In the Big 12, you really just have to survive. This is what Iowa State did last year. Iowa State was not built to win the Big 12, but they were built to win in the tournament last year. I feel like that's what Kansas State has done this year. And what, 13 new guys on the team or something? So, I mean, they had some returners, but even down to the end of the bench and past it, a lot of new guys.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been a tough enough rebuild job had that roster stayed together. But, of course, they lose Nigel Pack. You know, it's just tremendous. I mean, you can't say enough good things about what Jerome Tang did there. And, you know, there are some Mickey Mouse Sweet 16s, like Florida Atlantic is favored by, I think, 13 tonight against a 16 seed to get to the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
K-State is going up against Kentucky, which, say what you want about the win-loss column, it's still Kentucky. They recruit like it's Kentucky. They've been there a million times. Calipari's been in that position a million times. And so, you know, they didn't stumble their way there by beating a 12 and a 13 or something like that. And again, their season's not over. they could keep going.
Tshiebwe had 25 and 18, by the way.
Yeah, so they didn't do anything to stop him, but I guess that wasn't enough on its own.
Pretty wild.
So they were, I guess, right to be concerned about him.
Yeah. I think I had Tshiebwe picks-wise. Do you ever get on picks-wise? No free ads. Picks-wise has his line at 14 rebounds. He had like 21 or something in the last game.
That's crazy.
So, and I think in his tournament games, he's gotten 20 a couple of times, even though he played the one last year. I think he played well, so. Yeah. That was an easy over on 14.
Yeah. Is Baylor, is that one final?
I was just looking.
They're down by 9 with 47 seconds left, so yeah, they're done.
Creighton, man.
Hey, Baylor, which who knows how far Creighton is going to go. Baylor last year lost to the eventual national runner-up, but this is 2 years now coming off a national championship win where they've been a 1 seed and a 3 seed and haven't gotten past the second round. And so they're well coached. They've got good players. It's a great program, but I would imagine there might be some frustration in that fan base that they haven't done a little bit more with all that they have over the last 2 seasons.
Yeah, and Keontae George, 7 points, 3 boards, 3 assists. LJ Cryer with 28, Flagler with 15, Nembhard 28. Wow.
And I think the other, so TCU hasn't tipped off yet. They got their, let's see.
Gonzaga.
I think it was their third NCAA tournament win since 1968 on Friday night. So they've got Gonzaga tonight. They won't really tip off till we're almost done here. Texas going to the first Sweet 16 since Kevin Durant. I saw a picture of Kevin Durant in a Texas uniform on the timeline this weekend and just bizarre. And it kind of like puts into perspective how long it's been for them.
It does feel forever.
Yeah. And then Kansas losing to Arkansas in the second round, which I would brag about calling that in my bracket, which I did. But the rest of my bracket is so bad, I have no leg to stand on there. So calling one shot correctly based on everything I've gotten wrong, I'm not going to go there. But Eric Musselman, his team was, I think, way better than their 8 seed showed. And that guy's tough, man. He has some good teams every year.
Yeah, Arkansas and Illinois – that first round matchup that Kansas had a matchup with, they weren't good teams this year. Well, they were good teams, both of them. But they weren't consistent at all. But both of those had really high ceilings, and either of them, I think, could have beat Kansas, a Bill Selfless Kansas, which I don't think has been discussed much, at least by you and I.
No, and I saw that this was an interesting perspective that Bill Self has now had two pretty legit contending teams not have the opportunity to go to the Natty, once because of COVID, where they were, I think, the number one overall seed, which, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but they had a team capable in 2020 of being a Final Four type squad. And then this year he doesn't get to coach them in the tournament when they had 17 quad one wins and a ton of skins on the wall. You would have thought they were built to win in March just as well as anybody else. So unfortunate for Coach Self. And I think that covers everybody in the Big 12.
Yeah, that TCU jab you had, not a jab, just facts. Sorry, just facts. You presented facts. I know you're about to jump in there and say that. Presents another good segue. TCU losing in the rubber match today to Oklahoma, 5-7.
Yeah, you know what, Rob? We caught some flack for listing TCU as fifth on the Big 12 power rankings.
Yeah.
And all they seem to do, which Oklahoma, I think, had won 9 out of 10 coming into this series, so they were hot, so they jumped TCU in the power rankings. And all TCU baseball did was completely validate that ranking, in my opinion.
Since Houston, TCU has back-to-back losses to UT Arlington and San Diego, a midweek loss to Texas State, and a series loss to Oklahoma, 2-1.
Was the series, it was in Norman, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess that maybe, and I don't think OU is a bad team, but if you're a Big 12 title contender like TCU wants to be, and you're carrying a ranking like they have for most of this early portion of the season, you would maybe hope to have played better over the last 2 or 3 weeks than they have.
There were three Big 12 series this weekend. Kansas State, Baylor was the other one. And Baylor, all of a sudden, winning a series against Kansas State, 2-1. Also the home team there. But they lost 8-1 on Friday night, and then 8-4, 8-4 in the next two. So Kansas State, better than Baylor, we would say, losing this weekend. And then TCU better than Oklahoma, we would say, lost to Oklahoma this weekend. So some shakeup a little bit. And then we would say, right, Oklahoma State better than Texas Tech in the power rankings.
Yeah, we had them number one coming in.
But they lost to Texas Tech this weekend. You want to get into that series?
Let's do it.
Let's start with Friday night, where I thought Texas Tech was going to lose the whole time. And then you storm back late, and the 10th inning. Look, I trust the big I trust Texas Tech's bullpen. I do. They're a little inconsistent, but I think for the most part they've been really good. It's the defense that I have questioned the most on this team. Oklahoma State's defense was awful Friday night. They had two early errors, and then just flat out missed a fly ball to end the game. They kept calling it a double the rest of the weekend, but.
Yeah. Which, you know, I will say the counterpoint to that was Texas Tech, by and large, Friday night, they were making contact with the ball. They were driving it to the outfield and maybe getting a little bit unlucky. Like, those were pretty well-hit balls that were just out over and over, seemingly always with guys on base. And so was that a typical fly ball that is caught, you know, 98% of the time, yes. But also feel like you maybe get some credit for making contact, putting the ball in play that often, especially in the outfield. And, yeah, you were kind of gifted one at the end there. Although you were going to extras without that, right? So you could still have won it in more traditional fashion.
Yes. That was in the 10th.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's right. It was. So, anyway, I was frustrated Friday. I was like, man, I feel like you're not playing that badly, but you're just like you're putting guys on base, which is great. And, you know, that's a Moneyball quote, right? Like he gets on base and just not doing anything with it. And so you finally, you do kind of luck your way into one, which I think you maybe had some bad luck Saturday, which we'll get into. And baseball kind of evens out like this. But, yeah, I thought the bullpen looked good. And my only frustration with the pitching staff really, mm-hmm. is everybody looks great out of the bullpen. And besides Mason Molina and maybe now Tabor Fast, you don't have any consistent starters. So, like, going back to game one, Kyle Robinson struggles out of the gates. Brendan Gurton comes in and throws like 5 or 6 innings in long relief, looks flawless. And you're like, okay, maybe Gurton should be the starter. And then Robinson, when he gets a chance in Houston coming out of the pen, looks great. So you think, okay, maybe Robinson's better coming out of the pen. Well, Gurton, I wouldn't say Gurton has struggled. He did on Friday night. And same deal going back to last weekend. Robinson didn't look great in a start. I think he started one last weekend, or maybe that was a midweek I'm thinking of. Either way, it looks like you have five or six dudes that can come out of the pen and prefer that to be their role. Even a guy like Trenton Parrish, he got a couple starts last season, didn't go super well, but he looks pretty solid coming out of the pen. And so that's great. I love that the bullpen is deep, but I hope that you can find a Friday and a Sunday guy on either end of Molina starting on Saturday that feel comfortable and start and, you know, maybe are reliable to give you at least five innings or so before going into the bullpen.
Yeah, and that's a bullpen that had three separate multi-inning or at least more outs than one-inning relief appearances. Brendan Lysak, Ethan Coombs, and Ryan Free all pitching an inning plus, no runs, and only three walks between the three. Coombs had five strikeouts.
Yeah, I loved the energy, especially Lysak, because you were clawing back for that entire game. Like, you were trailing the whole time. And I wouldn't blame a pitcher for kind of losing some juice coming out of the bullpen and being like, oh, we're down by four runs, we're down by six runs. But those guys were fighting hard, and then they gave the offense a chance to get you back in the game, which they did. So I loved what I saw from Lysak. Ryan Free, his stuff has been great all year. And thankfully, we got to see a little bit of him on Sunday too. But yeah, I think your bullpen is definitely a strong suit of this team. And the bats, maybe a little bit inconsistent, but that's part of the sport. But again, I feel like starting pitching at this point, and I'll wait till we're done recapping the weekend. I feel like maybe consistency with starting pitching is maybe your most glaring need right now.
Yeah, and Coombs, he struggled a little bit in that second inning he was in, but that first inning, deadly stuff. And you see why every year he's moved up in a division and gotten better and better, and he's gotten his shot at Texas Tech. And hey, Peckham. From LCU last year.
Anything else on Friday?
Close my fingers there. Just to your point on the energy from the bullpen, I think that translates to offense. When your pitchers are out there hooting and hollering and giving you strikeouts and coming to the dugout saying, your turn, I think that generates something. Gage Harrelson 0-for-5. I think Coleman was hitless. Let's go back to the box score. Somebody else had a rough day. Brome hitless. I think that was a pinch hit. But Bazell, yeah. 3-for-5. Green, 2-for-4. Gavin Cash, 1-for-6 with two more strikeouts. Just a rough day overall for that group. Harrelson, yeah, had three strikeouts.
Yeah, and Cash was, in my opinion, a little bit uncharacteristically impatient. He was just going up there and, like, swinging at junk. He's down 0-2 like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, had he been maybe a little bit more patient finding the right pitch, maybe he could have made better contact. And I feel like that is one of those things that can snowball, you know, as a hitter. You know, you're 0-for-3, you're going up there, you're anxious to try to get ahead, and you, again, maybe swing at junk that you shouldn't early in the count. But again, to his credit and to the team's credit, he was kind of a microcosm of that. They kept fighting, kept putting the ball in play. What probably should have been a flyout winds up being the game-winning double, and you get the dub, which is all that matters.
Yeah. Harrelson, we'll do that at the end. So let's go to Saturday. I thought Molina pitched well. Walked a couple of leadoff batters, but he got through 5 1/3. And the game was not – I mean, he was down when he left, but the game was certainly attainable when he left. I still think Molina is your most consistent starter, but still, three walks, a wild pitch, some issues there. Just a loss. Oh, back to Friday night before this game. What'd you think of Hudson White's comments?
The ones that magically disappeared from Twitter?
Yes. but not before they were seen.
Yeah, I think I love the fire. Probably better for the post game of game three.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like that. It's a learning moment because, like Kobe, when Kobe's up 3-1, job's not finished. So when you're up 1-0 in a series, that's great, but job's not finished. But, you know, he's a true sophomore. I think you probably recognize it after he said it. I totally understand it, like heat of the moment, adrenaline flowing after a big win, that you want to say something like that. And, you know, for the most part, he and the team backed it up. They wound up taking 2 out of 3, but you don't want to give your opponent bulletin board material mid-series like that. And who knows, maybe Oklahoma State was fueled by that to some extent on Saturday.
Do you want to paraphrase what he said?
Oh, he straight up called him little brother. Yeah. Said, hey, that's 15 out of 17. They're little brother. So there's no paraphrasing to be had.
Oh, man. So good.
And again, he's right. But again, maybe time it for game three instead of game one.
That was my only issue, that it was after game one. You have to go play him twice again.
Yeah.
And he doesn't play on Saturdays.
So there, we're 5-0 in Hudson White plays.
Yeah. So I thought that was interesting. Oh man, that was really good. Anyways, Huddy has never lost to Oklahoma State when he's played. That's true.
So on Saturday, it's a 2 p.m. first pitch. Hopefully, everybody made it out to Rahino Barbecue for lunch right before then, because they're open Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. You know them, you love them. Rahino Barbecue, named a Texas Monthly Top 50 Barbecue Joint in the state of Texas. You can't miss when you go there. It's all good. The ribs, the brisket, the turkey, the sausage, the chili, the brisket burgers, and a plethora of side options. Get there early, because the lines are long. People have heard the good news about Rahino Barbecue. Or you can order ahead to make sure your food is there, RahinoBBQ.com. Give them a follow on social, at RahinoBBQ. Let's get into Saturday. My overall takeaway on Saturday was that baseball can be a little bit of a funky game, and you can lose pretty badly without playing that poorly. And I've got a couple of examples. First off, just like Friday, you kept putting guys on base at a pretty good rate, weren't converting it to runs, which part of that is your ability to perform in big moments, and part of it is just sort of a numbers game. Sometimes you hit well with runners in scoring position, sometimes you don't. So I didn't feel like down on the bats or anything. I was encouraged by how much traffic there was on the base paths. But here's just one of those moments where you feel like baseball's kind of an unfair game. Harrelson hits one hard right up the middle. I mean, like right over the base at second. The shortstop makes a great play, throws him out at first, and then rounding third, I think it was Hudson White, gets caught up, and they turn that into a double play. It should have been a single up the middle that scored one run.
I think it was Hester.
And instead, it's a double play. Do what?
I think it was Hester, maybe.
It might have been Hester. So anyway, you look at that at bat and you think, okay, Harrelson made great contact. Like, you'll take that pretty much anytime he's up at the plate, but Oklahoma State finds a way to make it a double play. I think the next half inning, maybe an inning and a half later, Oklahoma State hits one not quite as well to second base, and Austin Green can't quite field it and get it to first base in time. That turns into an RBI. That should have been a put out. And so just those two at bats out of a ton of different at bats in that game, you think, okay, like our guy hit the ball better, but it was a double play, and their guy drives in a run. I also feel like just you missed an opportunity. Their typical Saturday ace was a scratch. So their starting pitcher comes into the game with an ERA north of 6, and you didn't capitalize. You know, normally, if you told me the opposing starting pitcher has an ERA north of 6 with your lineup, I'm thinking, okay, we're going to – if not feast, we're going to at least get to the bullpen early. And that was an area where you felt like you had the deeper bullpen that played to your advantage. Instead, he holds you in check. He throws 100-plus pitches, and you weren't really able to take advantage of that part of the game.
He was really good. He was really good. Harrelson struggles again. Cash struggles again. Some big hits between the two of them. I think they both had one hit each. But Trenton Parrish also comes in and struggles, gives up 3 earned runs, The defense didn't help much in the game. But the defense hasn't helped a ton this season beyond the double plays and some plus plays in the outfield. You're just going to kind of have to survive the defense. It's not bad most nights, but it's not great either.
Well, and with as many freshmen as you have standing out there, you would hopefully expect that by game 10, 20, 30, that there's improvement, you know, week over week, and especially in some of the, that situational type stuff where they've maybe been there, seen that before.
Yeah.
I don't think you want to bank on that because you don't usually make huge leaps within the season, but hopefully they're starting to get their feet under them. Now, we had some contact. It was Tracer Lopez who was thrown out rounding third on that double play that, in my opinion, is typically an RBI single. Here's a moment, without skipping ahead to Sunday, that I think you saw improvement in situational baseball just from Saturday to Sunday. Austin Green comes up to the plate on Saturday with the bases jammed. I don't remember what the score was. Maybe you were down by two, maybe you were down by four, but an opportunity, especially with a bat like that, to really alter the trajectory of the game. Unfortunately, he couldn't do anything with it. Comes up to the plate with the bases jammed on Sunday while the score's 2-1 in your favor and basically puts the dagger in Oklahoma State with one swing of the bat. And so in the game of baseball, you're not ever guaranteed to get a base hit in a certain spot like that. But there was a moment on Saturday where you felt like you could change the game and weren't quite able to capitalize, but same batter, same situation on Sunday, you get exactly what you need.
Let's move on to Sunday.
Okay.
You only play 7 innings, which is mostly good when you win.
Yes.
When you lose, it's pretty tough. But you did win this one. 12-1, 14 hits. You limited them to 4. And we've been looking for some kind of solution for 2 years now on Sunday. And if we found one in Fast and Beckel, where you can go one time through the lineup, I mixed all those words up, with Fast, if he's pitching well, you let him go until he struggles, then you put in Beckel, and there's your starter. Kind of an opener, starter kind of roles there. Love it. Especially with those two, a little bit of differing styles. Beckel, a little hot today.
Yeah, I want to talk about that later.
Yeah.
But building on that, we saw Ryan Free pitch Friday and Sunday. If he's good for an inning and a half, you know, based on pitch count both nights, I think that's great. And you kind of make Sunday almost a Johnny Allstaff kind of game. Did we see Josh Sanders at all this weekend?
I think he pitched the Friday game, but
okay.
I can check.
If you could, just because I feel like that's another strong arm from the bullpen where we either didn't see him or didn't see much of him, and he's a guy that could also pitch on Sunday. You know, if he worked backwards, if he's your closer and he pitches the 9th, Free the 8th, you know, you could string that together, hopefully, with Fast and Beckel pitching the early and mid innings.
He did not pitch this weekend.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a story there.
I know he pitched. He pitched Wednesday.
Yeah, maybe they were saving him for Sunday. You know,
he threw 3 innings Wednesday.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, maybe they were just taking it easy then.
Yeah, and then they didn't need him Sunday.
Right. So anyway, not sure when we'll get Bo Blessy back, and I'm just throwing this out there. I wonder if they try Blessy on Fridays, keep Molina Saturday, and then stick with this Fast Beckel combo or Fast Robinson, whatever it is, on Sunday, or if they move that combination kind of pitching strategy up to Friday, because that's how it was when this strategy sort of originated with Dylan Dushek and Ryan Shetter, the Dushek combo. Didn't they normally pitch the first game? Like, mm-hmm. Or at least they did. I know in Omaha when you beat Florida, it was that combo that won game 1 in Omaha.
You go back to 2020, I know you didn't get to finish that year, but to start that year, it was, oh man, started with a B, and Micah Dallas.
Bonin?
Nope.
Bryce Bonin?
Nope. That's going to bug me.
Hmm.
I had a Step Brothers meme for him. This is pre-Gauchos. Anyways, Micah Dallas was he came out of the bullpen that year, and they were just mowing guys down. I think Rice was one of their last starts, and they just dominated. Six innings from the B starter. Damn it. And then Micah Dallas pitched the final three, and it was over.
Yeah. Let me go look that up. I'll say, too, on Sunday, this is where the good luck, bad luck of baseball kind of maybe worked against you on Saturday, but then it worked for you on Sunday. You're getting their ace, who on the broadcast they said was preseason Big 12 pitcher of the year. He had, I think, a sub-2 ERA coming in. And, it, I mean, he kept you in check for the first, what was it, five innings or so. And then they left him out there two or three batters too long. Load the bases. Austin Green hits a no-doubter to make it 6-1. And at that point, I felt like the game was pretty safely in hand. But they leave him in again. I think he walked somebody, or maybe it was a single. And then Bravo hits a two-run bomb. And then it's like really shaping up to not be so good for Oklahoma State. So that was a guy where, you know, you had maybe your best or definitely your best offensive output against their best starting pitcher, and your worst offensive output against, coming into the series at least, their worst starting pitcher of their typical weekend rotation. So ultimately, the end result, winning a competitive series 2-1, is about what I expected. But the individual games did not go how I thought they would.
Has Bravo worked himself into DH at-bats?
I think so. I want to talk about some guys that I think have emerged when we do sort of a broader takeaway. But before we get there, the Sunday point that you brought up is something that Don Williams with the Lubbock AJ already has a column about. He said you went 3-5 in your 8 Big 12 series on Sundays last year, and that cost you a chance to win the Big 12. I know Texas, a team that was also in the top half of the Big 12, you go up 2-0 on them, miss the chance for a sweep. You go up 2-0 in Lawrence, miss the chance for a sweep. You did sweep Oklahoma State. I think, did you get swept by TCU in Fort Worth?
Yes.
So you weren't able to get one back there. So oh, yeah, like it does, it is consequential what happens on Sunday. And that was, for whatever reason, a kryptonite of last year's team. And, you know, this is just one series, but it is a series against a really good team, a team that is, I think, definitely top three in the Big 12. They were ranked number 12 in the country coming in. And so to win on Sunday, does that mean you put that all of that issue behind you? Not necessarily, but it's certainly a good step in the right direction.
When you go back to last weekend with Iowa, you lose on a Sunday 9-8, and mm-hmm. the same issue's creeping out. And yeah. So heading into Big 12 play, it's like, oh, great, here we go again, the Sunday devil trying to get you, and then you lose on Saturday before the series with our friends on the Spaces, the Oklahoma State guys. They said, hey, what do you think about the series? I said, well, I think these are two really even teams. Somebody's going to win 2-1. I would lean Texas Tech just because you're at Dan Law.
Yeah.
I don't think you had much home field advantage on Friday night, not because the crowd wasn't good. It was, even though it was cold. You just didn't have a jet stream. You didn't have any wind that you're used yeah. to. It was a dead park.
Right. Well, and their fans, I don't even think this is like a bad take or anything, but their fans will think that they should have won the series because of how Friday night played out. And like, they're oh, yeah. kind of right. You won on a somewhat lucky play. But also, like, let's line up Mason Molina, one of the best pitchers in the Big 12, against a guy with an ERA north of 6. You know, let's play that game 10 times and see if Oklahoma State wins it, you know, more than twice. So that's just how baseball goes sometimes. I don't feel like you lucked your way into a series win. I think you had base runners throughout the weekend. Your bullpen looked good, and you got decent starting outing from Molina, and Sunday's pitchers, I thought, you pieced together a really, really good game. And so overall, I feel really good about this team. And let's talk about like opinions or takeaways going forward now, unless you have anything else specific to this series that you want to cover.
Not unless you want to talk about Josh Holiday being a crybaby.
Yeah. Okay, we can get into that.
He's got to be tired of just getting hammered by Tadlock. He's got to be tired of it.
Well, and just some of the stuff, like that foul ball that he was out there whining, he wanted a review. And I guess you were watching on ESPN Plus like I was. They don't have an angle of, like, you know, down the right field line.
No.
You can see it landing like 50 feet right of the foul pole, like on the track back there. So that doesn't necessarily tell you where it crossed the foul pole or anything. But like a reasonable person could discern that was foul and probably not that close.
No, that would have been a sick hook to get all the way to the other side of the track by the time it was, you know, 30 feet past the pole.
That would have been like me off the tee at the driving range.
100%.
Which is not typically how a baseball is hit. Just all the antics. So I'm lumping him and his team together here, but when it was a 2-1 game in the fifth inning, right before you broke it open, like, it's a competitive game. I'm going to back up further. There were two routine fly balls to left field that Hester, you know, got to put out. And both times he turns around and has like a somewhat lengthy conversation with the Oklahoma State bullpen. And I don't know. I can't pretend to know what's like normal in those circumstances. Because, you know, when guys get on first base, like they'll chat with the first baseman. And, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's trash talk. They might remember each other from high school or, you know, who knows. So I don't know if anything coming from the Oklahoma State bullpen was malicious, but there was at least extensive conversation. Then in the fifth, when it's 2-1, Kevin Bazell walks. And something must have happened before that, because the whole way he's trotting to first, he's staring at the pitcher, which I feel like you don't do a stare down after earning a walk for no reason. Like, there was something said.
Yes.
Timing was unfortunate for the Oklahoma State pitcher, because the next pitch, Austin Green puts four runs on the board with a grand slam. And it reminded me of that stand-up comedian. I think it's Cat Williams. You shouldn't have been talking shit.
Sounds like it.
I'm not going to do any more impersonations after how the Christopher Walken one went.
No, that was good, yeah. Do some more. Do more Cat Williams.
So that's what that reminded me of. Like, we could have memed that pretty good had I thought of that sooner. But it like continues after that. And at this point, Oklahoma State is about to get run ruled. Like, they're getting their ass beat. Which at that point I would quit chirping and just tip your hat and move on. It didn't stop though from either side. I didn't notice anything on the broadcast with Beckel that was like egregious, but it seemed to me that the Oklahoma State manager Holiday was almost like lobbying the umpire, saying like basically crying that Beckel was talking too much after a strikeout.
Yeah.
Which I just think is so soft. It's the opposite of, if you don't want me to dance, keep me out of the end zone. Like, if you don't want me to talk after striking out your batters, then
don't strike
have your
out.
Batters yeah. put a barrel on the ball, you know? And like, you're losing by 9 runs or whatever it was at that point.
So allegedly they'd gotten warned, and then Beckel said something and they were like, "Oh, I thought you warned us. You said something." He didn't listen to the warning.
And I wouldn't care if it didn't carry the 4-game suspension.
Oh yeah.
But apparently that is like an automatic deal, and they're going to appeal it. Hopefully they're successful. Because like, if he gets tossed from that game and that's it, who cares? You know, you're up by 10. But to me, that's just so soft. I mean, that's like crying that, I don't know, like at some point in a youth basketball league, okay, yeah, you have to like teach sportsmanship and all that. But these are grown men. The coaches are being paid. The players are basically being paid nowadays. It reeks of like picking up the ball and going home and crying about it. It's like, it's just so soft in my opinion. Like, if you're going to talk when the game is tied or a 1-run game, then be prepared for the other team to talk when you're down by 12 runs.
Yeah. I'm going to say something here, and it's going to cut both ways. Attitude reflects leadership. People always watch Texas Tech baseball and say, man, these guys are chippy, and Tim Tadlock's nothing like that. No, he is. He is. He'll get fired up, and you see it. You kind of have to watch or listen to his press conferences because because he talks slow doesn't mean he's not talking shit, all right? But the same way, like, they play with an edge. They play with fire, Texas Tech does, and I respect it. I don't respect Oklahoma State's edge because it just seems loserish. And that's a lot of what I think about Josh Holliday. Just seems like a loser. And certainly against Texas Tech, he has been.
And I've never seen anybody at Texas Tech cry that the other team was chirping. Like,
no.
Again, if you're going to dish it out, then you've got to be able to take it. And Texas Tech has never hesitated to dish it out. Like, I'm thinking back year two, you know, their first trip to the postseason under Tadlock, the incident in Coral Gables with Eric Gutierrez, the base runner kind of running into him. And I thought this was pretty innocent, but Gut just kind of like drops the ball in his lap. And the other coach gets real fired up about it. And like the rest of the dugout, coaches and players included, were ready to defend it. And like, you know, there's the water the tree incident at TCU, players splashing cups of water around, and Jace Young last year yelling at everybody running the bases. Like, that's who this team is. Is it too much? Maybe. But they've never acted that way. Lost a series 2 out of 3 and then turn around and go, oh, well, the other team was so mean to us.
Yeah.
Like, they're willing to line it up and play you and beat you and maybe talk some shit when they do it. And if you don't want them to do that, then beat them. And some teams do. Like, Stanford absolutely kicked your ass in Lubbock in the Super Regional 2021. And I don't feel like we were sore losers about it. You know, there's no incident. Tech tipped their hat and said, okay, y'all won. Y'all are the better team. So, sorry, Big Hen, I got fired up. It is a family podcast.
Hey, before I get to chime in, Clayton Beater was the guy I was thinking of.
Yes.
I wrote it down so I wouldn't forget.
So, anyway, either talk mess or don't, but don't do it and then lose and then cry that the other team is doing it too much.
And that space is, there was a comment about the football programs that a kid in eighth grade had seen Texas Tech win twice. What was it? You're now 15 out of 17?
16 out of 19.
16 out of 19. Yep. 16.
That's five straight series.
Yeah. Five straight series, which is 4 years.
Including a Super Regional.
So in kindergarten, you've not seen your team win a series. It's certainly not eighth grade, but that's certainly a lot more games a year. And it was even better when it was 5 out of 6 or 4 out of 6, and it was 2 series, and one of them was a Super Regional.
And I love how much Oklahoma State fans are hanging on to the tail end of their best era in football history. Because, like, in 4 or 5 years, what is that going to look? Well, 6 years ago, we beat you in football. Like, okay, great.
Yeah.
I had guys in our mentions today, Rob. I don't know if you saw this. I kid you not. Oklahoma State fans coping so hard, they were talking about basketball games that were played in the 1940s.
Oh, no.
To cope. Apparently, I didn't know this. Apparently, they won back-to-back national championships in basketball in 1945 and 1946. Now, it was an 8-team tournament.
Yeah.
That's before black players were allowed to play.
Yeah.
In 1945, at least, probably in 1946, you're missing a lot of guys from World War II, still kind of transitioning back to civilian life. So, like, congrats on that. Seriously, I'm sure there's a banner in their arena, and banners fly forever. You're national champs, but like, come on. We beat you 2 times in basketball this year. Okay, great. It was our worst season in 6 years.
Yeah,
and y'all are in the NIT, so. And then they bring up that they beat you in football. Okay, well, you went 7-6, no bowl wins, and Gundy's recruiting in the bottom, I don't know, quintile of the Power Five. So hope you enjoyed it while it lasted, because the football stuff is over with. I'll take our basketball program over theirs in recent memory. And if they win the next 13 in a row in baseball, then we'll be even Stevens going back to 2016.
Moving forward. the comments.
I'm going to talk about other players and takeaways
of this series.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving forward.
Yeah. Talk to me about the designated hitter spot.
Well, I was just thinking about that. Damian Bravo, I think, because you don't have a midweek. So you're going to go right down to Austin. Damian Bravo is either going to be your starting right fielder or should be the DH. I think those are the two spots right now. You had a right fielder in Gage Harrelson. Well, he's your center fielder now. I trust Gage Harrelson to kind of snap out of it. He had a pretty good day today. I think he's your everyday center fielder until Dylan Carter gets back, which, you know, could be like a regional if it takes that long. But right field, you know, Owen Washburn still hasn't really shaken out of it. If Gage Harrelson's over there, Jarrett Curtis is in center. Jarrett Curtis hasn't really gotten an opportunity to get any meaningful at-bats in a game, at least not a full game or otherwise. He usually gets pinch hit for, so they obviously don't trust his bat. But Damian Bravo has not played much in the field or at the plate, but in his appearances has been pretty good. So I would say Damian Bravo is the move. Now, at DH, the lineup, I feel like, has a few issues. Could you move Cash up? But where are you moving Green? Do you move Harrelson back and Bazell to 2 and Green to 3 and Cash to 4? Depending on who's DH, do you just want to trust the power there at 5? Do you move Cash even further back to kind of have a guy who's getting on base to come around? Hudson White, I think, has struggled a little bit, but certainly you're not going to take at-bats from him, though he's not playing every day. Do you put him in the field, or do you DH him and not give him full days off on Saturdays?
Well, they did put him at second. I think it was, the weekend or the midweek.
A couple times.
So here's what I'm struggling with. I wouldn't really screw with 1 through 4 in the lineup right now. It is a little bit lefty heavy, but I think that's okay. And maybe that's why it is the way it is. And I'm getting to this, but Coleman, if he's the DH in the 5 spot, batting ahead of Cash, if you move Cash up, then 4 of your first 5 batters are lefties.
Right.
And you can kind of pitch around that, at least situationally.
Sure.
But as good as he's swinging the bat, I don't know about overthinking that too much. You know, like, okay, Barry Bonds is a lefty, but like you're not going to bat him right after Gavin Cash or something.
Green's a switch hitter.
Okay, yeah. And I was, yeah.
But yes, I get what you mean, for sure.
Yeah. But I'm not trying to pick on any individual players at all, but last season, I think what Ty Coleman was best at was he was a really high floor player. He never struck out. A lot of singles, which, you know, the analytics nerds might argue with you about, but he was not a real power hitter. Like, he wasn't hitting doubles in the gap or home runs or anything extremely consistently. This season, with as loaded as you are, even like Dylan Carter, when he was healthy, batting in the bottom half of the lineup, Gavin Cash batting 6th, the potential, at least, of Hudson White and Owen Washburn, we've seen what they can do at the plate. You know, if they snap out of it, it feels like you could have a little more potency at that 5 spot. And once you move your designated hitter down to like 6th or 7th in the lineup, I think it begs the question, okay, if your DH is in the bottom half of the lineup, do you need to change designated hitters? And so I see both sides, because I'm not for tinkering with it too much in conference play. And he's a guy with a ton of experience who, again, has been solid, just not like overwhelming. So I'm not sure what is best with the lineup, especially while Dylan Carter is out. You know, in some ways it might make it easier if he was still healthier in center field, Harrelson in right field, and maybe you just put Bravo at DH and call it a day. But I don't know. There were individual moments this series where Ty Coleman came to the plate with runners on base, I think one situation with the bases loaded and wasn't able to capitalize, which, you know, again, you're not always going to in those situations. But I think you need production out of that spot in the lineup with as good as you are top to bottom elsewhere in the lineup. And his OPS coming into the series was just about lowest on the team for the guys that are getting consistent ABs game after game. So again, that's one thing if it's from a really stellar position player who's great in the field, but from the designated hitter, I think it does warrant, you know, maybe some consideration of doing something different.
Yeah, as it stands today, he's hitting .314, but he's got 35 at-bats, 42 at-bats, and the guys who've played every day have 100. So he's got half the at-bats that Hester, Bazell, Harrelson, Green, and Cash have. He's been hurt.
And that kind of cuts both ways because the guys with a larger sample size, you know, they can't hide from their true production. But right. Even still, their OPS is higher than Ty right. Coleman's in almost every instance. But that could just mean that Coleman is, like, maybe slumping a little bit out of the gates. He's coming back from some time off, and maybe, you know, he starts to pick it up in a big way. I think if history is any indication, Tadlock does not tinker too much with the lineup. So you're sitting here with, you know, the Big 12 leader in almost every major hitting category, batting sixth in your lineup, and I don't think he's about to move him up to like third or something. You know, he's probably going to keep him at sixth for most of the year. So anyway, I'll be curious what they do with that, but I would, with as much strength as you have in the lineup, I think one of the few areas you could nitpick is maybe that DH spot.
I just, again, as deep as you are, I don't know who else. Now, if Hudson White's doing it on Saturday, okay. But Hudson White's OPS is 900. Just a couple.
How about Drew Woodcox? He's a righty.
Yeah, he just hasn't. I mean, he had his opportunity. Do you put him back in? Yeah, sure.
How about Zach Fuletich? He's been good in spots. He's a better base runner.
Certainly.
I don't know. I feel like you maybe have a couple options, but again, it might be too late now that you're going into the heart of conference play to tinker with it too much.
That's one thing about Tim Tadlock. It's never too late to tinker. He loves it.
Yeah. We'll see.
And obviously Tim Tadlock gets to see all the practices and knows what he's doing. Right. I'm not arguing with him. But I do think that's something they're looking at, is what I would say.
Another guy you mentioned earlier, Tracer Lopez, another young gun, and there's a lot of youth on this roster. Earlier in the season, it seemed like you were kind of rotating a little bit at shortstop. You think he solidified that spot?
Yes.
Me too.
And I think there was some thought that Will Burns was dealing with an illness, and then there was maybe some other things going on, so it could be a process of elimination there, but I think Tracer Lopez has played really well. He made some really good defensive plays this weekend.
Yeah. Taber Fast, he was not in the weekend rotation to start the season, but our good friend and the often referenced Keith Patrick told us, like, he's a guy who's on a trajectory that he could be a weekend starter by the time the season is over with. And he was kind of thrust into that in part due to some injuries. But I think, especially today, he went, I think, four innings?
Three. Three and a third.
Maybe three and two-thirds?
Maybe.
Either way, pretty solid all the way through the lineup once, and then I think going into it the second time, only gave up one run. I thought he handled it well, and so – I don't know how reliant you want to be on a true freshman pitcher in your weekend rotation, but if he's producing, then maybe you keep him there.
Yeah, and hey, that was an Oklahoma State team that had won 12 in a row.
The longest winning streak in the country at the time.
Granted, it was Loyola Marymount, who they split with, Missouri State, Austin Peay, Arizona State, Utah Tech, Dallas Baptist. So it wasn't like they were playing heavy hitters, but it's hard to win 12 baseball games in a row.
Yeah.
You mentioned Dinger Derby, the oft-mentioned Red Raider dugout product. Part of the Staking the Plains Network. If you wanted to hear more insights during a game or around a game from Red Raider dugout, where would you go?
Oh, in the like during the game?
During the game, yeah.
So that this is actually a pretty cool perk of our Patreon community. You get access to the Discord server, which we talk about all the time, but you have, it's not just me and Rob in there. You do have other content creators from the Stake in the Plains network. So we have Michael and Spencer from the 23 Personnel podcast. We have the Seeing Scarlet ladies. And then, of course, Keith with Red Raider Dugout. I think David Collier is in the Discord, but he's just, he might be on read-only mode. But yeah, it's, I think it's cool. You know, cause Keith knows the game better than I do and, you know, knows the players and the staff better than I do. So there'll be a situation in the middle of the sixth inning or whatever, and he can kind of break it down and maybe give some insight that isn't being shared on the broadcast or something. So if you follow closely with baseball, and want to be part of that this baseball season, join us on Patreon, patreon.com/gamblinggauchos. It's $5 a month. Have some exclusive interviews, some in-depth look at Pac-12 versus Big 12 TV data, access to the Discord server. So hopefully you're getting a lot of bang for your buck. I know we have a good time in there, so hopefully everybody else does too.
Luke says, I don't like Ty Coleman's speed. If he's just going to hit singles, get Washburn some more at-bats, it'll pay off next year. Yeah. And maybe it's a thing where you get, I think Bravo has like 20 at-bats maybe. Maybe you give Bravo a series, but you let Washburn hit DH Friday, Sunday. I don't really like giving Hudson White a full day off. Now, obviously, catcher is a tough position, and you want to keep him healthy for regionals and super regionals. But if he's one of your best nine bats, I mean, surely you can go out and DH some, right?
Yeah, I don't think so.
And maybe that throws you off when you come back, and I don't know. It seems like lots of guys do it, so I wouldn't say it's too crazy.
I think overall the defense has been a little bit of a concern compared to at least some other elements of your game. But when the defense is never an issue, Rob, is when our friends over at Barnett, Howard, and Williams are handling the case. BHWlawfirm.com. They can help you out with all kinds of stuff. Catastrophic injury, if you got hurt on the job, maybe operating some heavy machinery, criminal defense, family law, certified in Title IX student litigation, one of the only law firms in the state of Texas to carry that distinction. They hope you never need them, but you've got somebody really solid in your corner. If you do, Barnett, Howard, and Williams Law Firm, three double Texas Tech grads. You can learn more at bhwlawfirm.com.
All right, I have one major concern with this Texas Tech team.
Okay.
And right now it's just anecdotal. I'm trying to get some stats here from D1 Baseball. But let's just keep it anecdotal because I can't figure out where they have it. Stolen bases. Oklahoma State was doing something I don't see often. It is kind of a college baseball, high school baseball thing. You kind of have the little league thing that Texas Tech does. They just poke their bat out there. They're never going to bunt, but they poke the bat out there to make the guy throw a ball. You see that in little league a lot. No, I'm not calling it Bush League. You see it a lot there. Oklahoma State did more fake steals than I've seen in a while. But A, it worked. And B, that's obviously, I don't know that it worked. They got four or five stolen bases Friday. But pretty much
they also had a couple guys get caught in a pickle.
Absolutely. And you did see that today for sure, I think. But I just, it feels like, and this goes back to Oklahoma last year, you just kind of can steal at will against Texas Tech. And I don't know if that's a pitching thing, they're not keeping the guy on base, or if it's they just feel like they can run on Hudson White's arm. He got a guy today in the first inning, but that does feel a little worrisome to me because it feels like if you run up a team in the against a team in the regionals that just loves to run, you might be susceptible there.
Yeah, and in the Big 12, I think West Virginia has really carved out an identity. They're always aggressive on the base paths. I don't remember the stats from last year, but I did look, and they're like – far and away number one in stolen base attempts and successful stolen bases so far. I was looking at that on D1Baseball.com. So yeah, that's one where you have to go to Morgantown this year. They look solid. You know, they're like middle to top half, I think, early on in the Big 12. And so, yeah, you maybe start to dread some matchups like that in conference play or in the regional if you get paired with a team that likes to run and can do it effectively.
Looking across the Big 12, Mason Molina leads the conference in strikeouts with 37. That's pretty solid. Conference hitting leaders, Gavin Cash, second now. Weatherholt from West Virginia, heard that name a lot. Gavin Cash has 7 home runs, leading the conference. Austin Green with 5 now at 4th. And then stolen bases, as you point out, Kansas State has 15, the leader, Brendan Jones. And then it's West Virginia with 15, 10, and 10. A kid from Oklahoma has 13. So,
and it takes away one of your best assets defensively, which has been turning two, like you alluded to. You know, it's one thing. It gives you some margin for error if you can walk a guy, give up a single, and have a good chance to force a ground ball, double play. But if that guy steals second before you have the force out opportunity, then it takes away one of the things you're best at defensively. So that could kind of make that a double whammy.
Now, I know you hate throwing to first base, but maybe that's something they do a little more moving forward, or at least look over there a little more often.
Yeah.
All right, you want to do a Discord mailbag?
Let's do it.
Did you have any other thoughts on the baseball season moving forward? I know you head to Austin next weekend.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough series. They haven't had as good of a start as they would like to. This is the preseason Big 12 favorite. I think they had 8 of the 9 first place votes. You know, they're always going to have talent. Going to their place is not going to be easy. No matter how it happens, if you get 2 out of 3 in Austin, I'll feel really good. If you get 1 out of 3, I think you lick your wounds and that's okay. You just really want to avoid a sweep, because that'd be really detrimental in terms of your Big 12 title chances. And we talked about this before the season. The way your Big 12 schedule plays out, you play the 4 best teams in the conference your first 4 series. And if you can survive that above 500, you're going to have a shot your last 12 games in those final 4 series to make some noise. Because that's where you could maybe finish like 10-2 or something if you get hot. But if you start out 5-7, 6-6, that's going to make that tougher to do. So you kept pace this weekend, and I think if you leave Austin 3-3 in Big 12 play, given who you've played and where you've played them, you know, is that going to wow anybody? No, but I think that's good enough to live to die another day, so to speak.
Texas 10-0, but have played Sam Houston, Mercer, Manhattan, North Dakota State, and New Orleans in their last 10.
Yeah, but they also lost a lot earlier in the season that, you know, to teams that they probably had no business losing to.
Yeah. And they've also lost to some really good teams. So I don't want to hammer them too good, but
No.
They lost a game to Indiana. They lost a series to Cal State Fullerton. But 14-7. There you go. Going to be interesting with Cash in Austin. Yes. Luke will be there on Saturday. Tech is undefeated with him in attendance this year. There you go. And then protect Gavin Cash at all costs. All right, the Discord mailbag brought to you by Diversified Lenders. Diversified Lenders gets your accounts receivable into cash. Call them Red Raider owned and operated. 2 generations of Red Raiders. Is it better to not make the tournament or get bounced in the round of 64?
Better to make it.
Always. It's always better to make it.
Obviously, there are levels to this, but that's like the benchmark of a quality season. Did you make the tournament or not? And so, yeah, it matters once you get there. And, of course, if you go to the Elite Eight or whatever, that's awesome. But making the tournament is kind of like the first box you can check on. Did we have a good season this year?
The question asked Ryan says, it doubles down. He's asking about if you're a high seed. Is it better to make the tournament as a 2 seed and lose in the first round to a 15 or just not go? I still say the same.
See, okay, that's where I might change my answer. Like, don't you think Purdue would have rather gone 18 and 14 this year and not made the tournament versus what they had to endure last week?
If it's a 1 seed and you get bounced, maybe. But otherwise, I think the season outweighs.
Okay, yeah, because that's the other side of that. Is like they're, I'm assuming they were Big Ten regular season champs, and
yeah,
maybe,
probably.
I mean, they're the 1 seed. I'm just guessing.
Yeah, I think Michigan State maybe won the tournament.
So yeah, again though, like you'll always be remembered for that. You know, even the 2 versus the 15 kind of gets forgotten about. That actually happened to Iowa State when they were a 2 seed back in like the 90s or something. That's a little more forgettable, but every time a 16 beats a 1, it's only happened twice. That will be remembered forever.
The next time Texas Tech is a 2 seed or a 1 seed will be the first time they've done it. So give me it. I'll take it. In the appropriately named Stop Replying to the Mailbag, You Animals mailbag, someone replies, my soul would leave my body if Tech got tossed as a 2 seed and lost to Princeton. However, I think you take the 2 seed. I agree. Both the TV and heart would be broken in that scenario.
True.
Okay, yeah, there's just a bunch of responses here. This is, the mods have lost all control.
What's new?
You're stranded on an island. The only two viable hydration options are ketchup water and hot dog water. Would you survive?
Okay, I might be pulling a Kyle on this, but wouldn't both of those have a ton of salt and like not be good for you?
Well, on a desert island, if you're not eating, they would be good for you.
I don't think you're supposed to. That's why you can't just drink the ocean water. Like that kills you faster.
You're saying
like there might be too much sodium in both of those, in hot dog water and ketchup water, for that to like have diminishing returns. But
you know, this is,
I understand
kind of
the premise of the question, so I think I'll lean ketchup water, but I don't like ketchup.
To me, the question precludes anything beyond it. Will you survive? Yes, I would. I would survive. I'd figure it out. Another response to the mailbag, but I'll read it because it's funny. Is Fred Durst there? Do you get that reference?
No.
You're not a Limp Bizkit guy?
No.
Start Bench Cut, their hot dog flavored water song. Can I name 3 Limp Bizkit songs? Behind Blue Eyes, which is a cover. And I'm not a Limp Bizkit guy either. Question for a non-DCTF episode. Hey, by the way, if you want to listen to us on Wednesdays, you can join the Patreon and live stream on Twitch Wednesday nights, or you can listen to that podcast on the feed of the Dave Campbell's Republic of Football Network podcast feed, where we debuted last Thursday as Kyle and Jacob, which I was not offended at all. Should there be a season-long knockout tournament in basketball like soccer has, would you prefer it to be D1 only or open to all NCAA teams in all divisions?
No.
No. I don't even know what that is. Lots of responses here. What is the longest you'll wait for a table at a good to great restaurant?
Back in the day, before the service industry went to absolute crap, if they gave you an estimated wait time, you could usually count on it being not quite that long.
Yeah.
So if they said 45 minutes, you think, okay, maybe like 30, 35 minutes. So if that were the case, if they said an hour, I'd be like, you know what? It's probably only going to be like 45 minutes. If we're committed, that's the longest I would wait. But now if they tell me an hour, I'm like, well, that could be an hour and a half, and I'm not doing that.
I don't wait at restaurants. West wants. You what are we waiting in the West want?
If they told you 5 minutes, you wouldn't wait?
I mean, yeah. But I generally, I don't go out a lot. I don't go to restaurants.
Because there's also the calculus. Odds are if there's a wait at a restaurant, it's like a busy night for all restaurants. So right. By the time you get in the car, drive to the next restaurant, and get on their wait list, you could like probably already be eating at the first restaurant.
I also will sit in the bar. If they're like, hey, it's a 30-minute wait, or you could sit in the bar. All right, I'll sit in the bar. That's fine. I did that at a popular restaurant last week. Went out, had a party of six, and they were like, yeah, it's going to be a while. It's pretty packed. I said, yeah, it is. I can see. And they were like, or you could just sit at that table. Now, the table's half full. It's a long table right in front of the bar. So we sat with other people and just had our meal instead of waiting.
Nice.
With a crowd of people around us waiting for their tables, and we just got in and out.
That's smart.
There was a moment, though. I was in Arlington. I think I've told this story before. I went to Papa Do's, and we walk up, and we see a ton of empty tables. We're like, oh, yeah, we're going to get in and out of here. It's awesome. Then we get to the porch. If you've been to the one in Arlington, you know there's a huge porch. It is packed. The porch is packed. We're like, this is odd. So we go up to the lady, and we're like, hey, can we get a table? And she says, 3 hours. These people are sitting there waiting for 3 hours for Papa Do's.
That's what I don't understand. Like, how does anybody get on the wait list after an hour?
No. So, and I said, there's empty tables in there. And she just said 3 hours. I said, no, I get that, ma'am. But what about the empty tables? There's a whole dining room empty right there. And she just said 3 hours. And I was being very nice. But I said one more time, I said, so those empty tables just aren't getting sat? And she said, 3 hours, sir. Would you like to wait? I said, no. We left. And then we went to a really sketchy place and did not go into that one either. I think we settled for like a Dimba's style chicken place there in Arlington, which was good. It was better than Papa Do's. But I've not been to Papa Do's since. That was 3 years ago. I'll never go back. Papa Do's is dead to me. Comment says 30 to 45 minutes. I'll do 90 for barbecue. I will wait in a long line if it's like... Generally, if I'm on vacation, is the only time I'll wait about an hour.
Especially if you know the deal going in and like you get there at 11, knowing you're going to be in line for an hour and a half. You still get to eat at 12:30, which is a normal lunchtime. So
I'm a planner. I have high anxiety, so I'm not, I don't want to go sit in a waiting room. Then I'll just be frustrated the whole dinner.
Yeah.
Final thoughts?
No, I think that's a good place to leave it.
I think Texas Tech baseball can win the Big 12. I think they will host a regional this year, and I hope they get all the way up to a super regional host. Yes, Kyle?
My final thought, just reminding people, go subscribe to the Republic of Football podcast with Dave Campbell's Texas Football. It's wherever you normally listen to us, besides YouTube. I don't know if they have a YouTube channel, but Spotify, Apple, subscribe there. That's where we'll be midweek from now through at least the end of baseball season. And then in summer, I'm not sure exactly what our programming schedule will be. So if you really love the Gauchos, you got to subscribe two different places, but we hope to make it worth your while.
Yeah, every Thursday we'll be there.
Sure. Yeah, we record Wednesday.
And then, right.
Yeah.
One last final thought. We mentioned Red Raider Dugout earlier as your premier place for Texas Tech baseball. Obviously, we're going to do our due diligence as well. You mentioned Seeing Scarlet. The women's NIT in Lubbock again Monday night. The Lady Raiders and SMU in round two of the WNIT. To go to the Sweet 16, because that is a full 64-team tournament. Anything else?
Nope. Love y'all.
That was the shortest final thoughts of all time.